My name is George Maza, and if we have not yet met, I hope that we have a chance to meet. This is not my usual perch on Sunday mornings. I'm usually sitting over there by the door. So if you have seen me before, that's where I usually am. But it's great to be here. And one of the things they don't tell you when you are invited to preach is that you have this wonderful perspective of this room. And you need to know that you all look wonderful. Okay? But it's an honor to be asked to say a few words this morning. And for me, it's quite humbling. When a doctor treats a medical condition, there are often a number of options, ranging from the least to the most aggressive forms of treatment. In some situations, which is what we all want to hear, is that it's just a wait-and-see approach. Things will develop. But the other extreme is that what's needed is immediate invasive surgery. That's important to keep as context because the writer of today's gospel was St. Luke. And Luke was known in the early Christian community as the beloved physician. Luke was a doctor. And I imagine that Luke, from a professional perspective, had a special appreciation of Jesus' healing ministry. And it might be useful to think of the story of Lazarus and the rich man as one of the treatment options that a healer might choose. An aggressive cure, not for the body, but for the soul. In this instance, the story functions as skilled spiritual surgery. A scalpel guided by a firm hand, opening a wound, slicing inward toward the heart for the sake of healing. Like the prospect of major surgery, the story of Lazarus and the rich man makes us uncomfortable. It forces us to face our responsibility to the poor. We might come to church sometimes for peace, for the support of community, for a moment of silence, thanks for our many blessings. But there are other times that we as a Christian community gather and we have to hear the firm words of the gospel. And sometimes that makes us uncomfortable. It makes us squirm. Let's remember the story we just heard. Lazarus, a poor man before the time of Medicaid, is covered by ulcers, licked by dogs, goes to the gate of a rich man with the hope that he will get crumbs from the rich man's table. The rich man, you have to imagine him wearing Ralph Lauren purple label, he is quaffing Dom Pérignon, and the key thing is that he pays Lazarus no attention at all. He doesn't even know he's there. In the end, what happens, as with all of us, both die. Lazarus goes to heaven and is seated near Abraham. The rich man dies, and we're told he goes to Hades. And what's interesting about the word Hades, it's a Greek for the unseen place. And that from that place, the rich man looks up and he sees Lazarus next to Abraham in heaven, and he calls out to Abraham and says, "Please, Father Abraham, send Lazarus to me so that he will just touch water and quench my thirst. Please send him." Notice that even in that request, it's a request from someone who is used to being served. The rich man is saying, "Send my servant." But Abraham says, "No, there's such a gap between us that can't happen." And the reality of it is that Lazarus had nothing in this life while you were very comfortable. And now you have to face the consequences of your indifference. So the rich man's fallback position is, okay, then send Lazarus to my brothers because they're leading the same life that I led, a life of indifference. Please send Lazarus to them so that they could change their lives. And Abraham says, no, that is not in the cards. That if they can't listen to Moses and the prophets, which they already have, they're never going to listen to a man who even rises from the dead. So that's the story. But continuing the analogy of surgery, there are certain preparations that we need to make to allow the healing properties of this story to reach us. And they have to do with looking at the story, first the text for some of the ironies in it, and then looking at the possibilities of interpretation that we will both take and not take. First, the text. It's important to remember that the Lazarus in this story is not the Lazarus of Bethany. And even the early church got confused. They would often conflate these characters. Remember that this story is in the Gospel of Luke, whereas Lazarus of Bethany is in the Gospel of John. And Lazarus of Bethany was, as you remember, was the brother of Martha and Mary, a friend of Jesus, and he was the person that Jesus raised from the dead. And contrary to what the expectation is in the story, the rich man's expectation, even when this Lazarus was raised from the dead, he didn't have the effect that the rich man had hoped. Secondly, I always thought one of the incredible details of this story is that it says that that Lazarus was licked by dogs. And as when I was a boy listening to this in church, I always thought that was fascinating. So what's interesting about that is, again, it's the perspective of a physician, someone who actually might have observed this. Lazarus is covered with ulcers. And one of the interesting things is, and for those of you who have dogs or other animals, that when a dog has a wound, it will lick the wound. It's an instinctual response. And there's a belief that there is a healing property in the saliva. And because dogs are social animals, they will lick not only their own wounds, but they will lick the wounds of those who are members of their pack. And so it's the interesting twist in this story is that Lazarus is being accepted into the pack of the dogs, that the dogs are actually compassionate toward him because they're tending to his wound, much more than even the people in the rich man's house are doing. So we're to remember that. And then the final textual note is that notice that in the story that we're actually given very little details about the morality or virtues of either Lazarus or the rich man. The single fault of the rich man, because he could have led otherwise a completely virtuous life, his single fault was that he did not notice Lazarus. Lazarus was just not even on his radar screen. He didn't know that he was there. Now for the various ways of interpretation. And I lay these out just to show that they are available, but we may not take these paths. The first is that the story presents a vision of an afterlife that is quite harrowing. The early church struggled with this. They were not sure if this story was a parable, a lesson, where there's a twist, a reversal of fortunes, or was this a story that actually was a revelation? Did this actually show the life of the world to come? And you can imagine, depending on how you answer that question, it would have profound consequences in how you led your life. And so for many of us who have this image, the image of hell, where people are in torment and where people are suffering for their sins for eternity in flames, that's an image I think for many of us is hard to accept because it's not consistent with the loving God that we know. The problem is that if we are mindful of that story and how it has been used to abuse people, that in our polemic to cast that aside, we may also cast aside the important message that's embedded in the story. The second avenue of interpretation, and again, this is a one that we could take, but is that many people rightly observe that any discussion of the story of Lazarus and the rich man cannot ignore the larger analysis of disparities in wealth, which are the result of systems of economic and political injustice. We as a Christian community cannot focus just on individuals, but have to think about what is the larger social sins that we need to address. The danger, however, in jumping so quickly to a discussion of social justice is that doing so may allow us to skip over the personal questions. The questions that each of us have to ask ourselves. That is, what is our responsibility to the poor? What is my responsibility to those who are in need? So moving deeper then into the story, into the personal dimension, leads us to a series of other questions. I suggest that we ask ourselves this morning, who am I in the story of Lazarus and the rich man? We come to church at this moment with the stories of our lives. The narratives of our lives have led to this moment. We bring all of who we are to this moment, and at this moment, this story of Lazarus touches ours. So who are we in this story? With whom do we identify? Am I Lazarus? Am I the rich man? Am I Abraham? Am I one of the brothers or another of the relatives of the rich man? It's important to take a moment and think about where you place yourself in this story. If you identify as Lazarus, is the divine justice in this story enough? Does that bring consolation? If it's our assumption that we're only rich men in this congregation today and there's no place for Lazarus, what does that say? Are there times in our lives when we have been both the rich man and Lazarus? Maybe today, maybe this morning. Perhaps some of us identify with Father Abraham, removing ourselves to offer judgment on how the rich should be more generous. Or perhaps we identify with the rich man's brothers and relatives. We just want to go on with our lives, we lead good lives, and just please don't bother us with these irritating ethical questions. But for those of us who identify as the rich man, there is no escaping the story's stark question about my responsibility to the poor. And that leads us to even another question. Do we notice the poor around us? If we do not dodge the question, and in this political season, we all know what dodging questions look like. You just watch TV and you know what that looks like. But if we don't dodge the question and really ask, do we notice the poor around us, we have to notice that there are individuals whose lives touch our own, people who are in need. And these are not just the poor in a generic way. These are people with names. One of the distinctive features of the story that we heard this morning is that the central character has a name, and it's the only one of Jesus' lessons in which the central character has a name, and his name is Lazarus. And Lazarus is a derivative of the Hebrew Eleazar, which means God who helps. How do we react to the poor? What do we do when we encounter people in need? Do we look away because we're embarrassed? Do we feel guilty? Think how useless guilt is, that it takes all of the attention back to ourselves rather than to another person. Perhaps we're numb, that's such an overwhelming problem that that's our way of coping. Or we can allow ourselves to notice, which is what the story is trying to force us to do today. We are to notice, that we're supposed to notice without flinching that there are people around us who are suffering. We can choose to drop the defenses, and we can allow our hearts to break. One of the obstacles in addressing poverty is the fear of feeling the devastation of what we witness. Shielding ourselves from another's distress comes at a great cost, not just to them, but to us. But with God's grace, we can take a different path. We can be open to a prick of conscience. We can decide to notice. We can decide to act, to do something, no matter how small, that will actually make a difference in someone's life. But what do we do? That's the age-old question. And it's a question that only each of us can answer for ourselves. Is the gospel calling me this morning to conversion? A change of heart in helping those in need. There is no simple answer that we can give once and for all to this question. We encounter the question continuously with every new report of a natural disaster, with every new encounter. For me, the question comes in the form of the men who regularly sleep under the cardboard boxes whom I pass every evening on my way home from the Justice Department. They are stretched out under the polished granite portico of the building where I work. I do not have to go far to find Lazarus at the gate. We have all of these, all of us have these people in our lives, and they all have names. And rarely do we talk about them, let alone talk to them. The disheveled woman asking for money at the slow intersection on the drive to work. The man with the cane sitting propped up against the entrance to the CVS asking for spare change. Is each one Lazarus asking for crumbs from our table? Whatever personal policy we've adopted to navigate these uncomfortable situations, or to deal with the fact that 1 in 5 people in the District of Columbia live in poverty, the answer is never satisfying. Does it mean giving money to the woman holding the coffee tin in the subway entrance this week? Is that enough? Is that what we're supposed to do? Our social service friends will say, will advise us otherwise. Does it mean offering to pay the medical bills of someone without health insurance? Does it mean deciding to put a check in the white envelopes that are often in our seats to pay for benefits for the hungry? Does it mean volunteering, as many people do in this church, for Samaritan Ministries or another organization serving the poor? Does it mean getting involved in work to help refugees or assisting LGBTQ people seeking asylum? Does it mean taking on a pro bono client, or contributing or getting involved in a political advocacy organization? There are endless possibilities. We read the gospel every Sunday because we believe that God uses the text to reach us. Listen carefully to the calling that may come to you today or the days ahead. If you are attentive, unlike the rich man or unlike his brothers, you will see the face of Lazarus. Lazarus will come to you. In the end, only you and I can decide, however, how we will answer the question that the gospel asks. What is our responsibility to the poor? What will I do? The 13th century Sufi mystic Rumi wrote a favorite poem called Childhood Friends, which concerns the patriarch Joseph and the son of Jacob. The poem astutely observes that a surgical wound is the place where the light enters you. The wound is the place where the light enters you. The wound is the place where the light enters you. We may recognize the story of Lazarus and the rich man as the aggressive spiritual intervention that it is, surgically cutting to the core, leaving a wound through which healing light may enter.
Thank you for sharing in the life of St. Thomas Parish, a progressive church in Washington, D.C.'s DuPont Circle. We strive to see Christ in each person and to be Christ in our community, city, and world. No matter where you may be in your own spiritual journey, we welcome you at St. Thomas. We invite you to worship with us and to join us at God's table.